This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Egypt stands on the edge of historic change as protesters once again streamed into Tahrir Square today.
Inside the square, the mood is jubilant. I've seen it compared to Times Square in New York City on New Year's Eve and the fall of the Berlin Wall.
We're hearing lots of conflicting reports. We have no idea what's going on. Some people are telling us that he's going to give a statement tonight and that it's likely that he's going to leave. Others have said this is not confirmed. Some say the army's taking over. There's going to be a coup. Or some have said that he's transferring powers to the vice president. So until now, no one really knows what's happening.
Thousands of young Egyptians in Cairo's Tahrir Square are watching and waiting, as reports indicate President Hosni Mubarak may step down today.
The rest of the world watches and waits as well. Here's President Barack Obama a little earlier today.
What is absolutely clear is that we are witnessing history unfold. It's a moment of transformation that's taking place because the people of Egypt are calling for change. They've turned out in extraordinary numbers, representing all ages and all walks of life. But it's young people who've been at the forefront. A new generation. Your generation. Who want their voices to be heard.
And we've got some of those voices in the studio right now. Joining us is Zaghloul Ayad. He's founder of the Voice of the Arab World, Incorporated, located in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Mr. Ayad, good to have you here.
Thank you.
Also joining us is Farouk Elbaz, a geologist at Boston University and an Egyptian who served as science advisor to President Anwar Sadat for 3 years before Sadat's assassination. Mr. Elbaz, good to have you.
Thank you.
Also with us is Ina El-Hadidi. She's an Egyptian-American living here in Massachusetts. She's a student at UMass Boston. She's been talking to her family in Egypt throughout the day and monitoring events there very closely. Ina El-Hadidi, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks, Meghna.
Ina, let me start with you. What is your family saying? They're in Alexandria. Is that correct?
Yes, they are.
What has today been like for them?
Well, since the morning in Egypt, since Thursday morning, there's been a lot of anticipation since they've been hearing from different sources, from different ministers, and in Egypt that he will be stepping down, he will be making a huge announcement. But there's also a sense of cynicism since we've been told this before, and a lot of people are not sure. Is he going to step down or not?
Well, apparently his speech was supposed to start at 10 p.m. Egypt time, which was just a few minutes ago. News reports say he hasn't begun speaking yet. When he does, we will bring that to you. But so, Ina, if there's been all this anticipation, is there also concern as well of what might happen if indeed President Mubarak does end his 30-year term as the head of Egypt today?
Of course, there is great anticipation because I think the worst-case scenario would be Omar Suleiman taking over, because I think it would just be an extension of the regime, of the Mubarak regime. It would just be another face to the same exact system.
Suleiman being the current vice president.
Yes, yes. And also the former head of intelligence in Egypt and the Mukhabarat, which are extremely feared. They are an organization of fear, and they've committed many crimes against the Egyptian people. So I think that is not a good precedent, I mean.
Farouk Elbaz, talk about that. These are concerns. There seems to be a sense of enormous jubilation in the streets and yet concern about what might come next.
And it is right for these young people to have that concern and the cynicism, because the generations before them failed them. And they've gained nothing for so many years. And the regime has established a state of stagnation, and the Egyptians felt that this is not them. This is somebody else that is forcing that state of stagnation and forcing a state of lack of freedom and lack of self-respect and so on. And they want to make sure that they are on the right path. They will call the shots. They are not going to cow down to anybody. Whether it is the army or the Mukhabarat or the intelligence, as Ina said, it is something that they want to hold the keys to their future by themselves. And they proved that they are capable of doing that.
Hmm. And Zaghloul Ayad, to you, founder of the Voice of the Arab World, Incorporated in Cambridge, there is a sense of jubilation. There is concern. And what is the concern? That a kind of martial law might clamp down on the country now, right?
Yes, I believe if that's coming to the martial law, that will be the day of disaster in Egypt. And I hope does not come to that point. In the last few hours, there is a revelation going on. President Mubarak may have left already Egypt to another country, and that's I'm sensing from the president to been since this morning said he's going to speak and he's not showing up, and some others from the source coming in said he left to Sharm el Sheikh, and we're not sure exactly whether he's going to speak in the next hour or so, and the government dragging down. I think the people of Egypt has spoke their word, and that's, I think that should be the end to the government, the corrupt government. In the last few days, the rumor indicating President Mubarak has an asset of between $40 to $70 billion. Egypt owned that of $24 billion. For one person to own all this wealth and member of his cabinet staff, everybody own at least $40 to $50 billion, which United States giving Egypt at least $1.5 billion every day. That's, I think the people of Egypt has raised their voice, and I think should be heard from the President of the United States. And other in the United States should stand with the people of Egypt.
And in fact, as you said, I believe it's about $1.3 billion every year that the United States gives in aid directly to the Egyptian
to
military.
To Egyptian military, and Hosni Mubarak have at least right now $70 billion himself, his son approximately $20 billion.
Well, you can join us if you have thoughts on what's happening in Egypt today. If you're an Egyptian based here in Boston and you have want to have your say, you can do it with us. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. The BBC News is reporting that Egyptian State TV is currently broadcasting a global weather forecast, possibly not what most people have tuned in for. Ina El Hadidi, tell me, I mean, this has been, as you know, we talked last week on Radio Boston, a revolution of the youth, of the young people. Do you, in speaking with cousins that you've been in connection with and rest of your family members there, do they feel that no matter what happens, that it will be a positive change because anything is better than President Mubarak, or that the problems of Egypt in terms of the economic situation, the unemployment, are so great that there's still a long term for them to of struggle for them?
These are definitely valid points, but I think Egyptians are resilient people. They are very optimistic. They're looking towards, actually last week around the time when we spoke, a lot of Egyptians were divided because there was still a little bit of sympathy for the Mubarak regime. A lot of people calling to just let him finish out the next 6 months and resign with his honor. He served this country, yada, yada, which I thought was absolutely just ludicrous that people would suggest that a man who I think committed many crimes against the Egyptian people, including, like he said, like having $40 to $70 billion worth of money. And actually, America gives Egypt $1.9 billion. $1.3 billion of that is just military aid that was from Camp David. So I don't. None of that goes to the Egyptian people.
Mm. And so, and you know, as well, what I wonder is, do you actually, do you, you know, last week we had another young person with us when we had our roundtable of young Egyptian Americans here, Habib. He said he wanted to go back.
Yeah.
Do you have similar feelings now?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I wanted to go back right from the beginning, you know, but it seemed impossible. I was actually reading this morning on The Lead that a lot of Egyptian expatriates had returned to Egypt. Actually, the person who had reinvigorated this whole campaign when everyone had thought that it was about to falter was Wael Ghanim. And he actually was an expat, and he's a Google executive. He lives in, I think, the Emirates. And he had gone back to Egypt. He had anonymously formed this Facebook group for Khaled Saeed. And when he went on television to talk about his imprisonment and torture by the Mubarak administration for 12 days, he reinvigorated the entire movement. And I'm so proud of him and of Egypt in general.
We are waiting for President Hosni Mubarak to speak to his nation. We're not sure when that's going to happen, but if he does, we will bring that speech to you. Farouk Elbaz, let me come to you with this question. Do you have any sense, can you speculate in any way what's going on in Cairo right now? What are the factors that are weighing on President Mubarak before he makes this speech, if indeed he does?
Yeah, it is quite possible that he had recorded that speech already. And it's quite possible that he has already decided where he might go, and where he might go, it might actually be Abu Dhabi. And the discussion right now with him and the military is the fact that the military has put its foot down because Omar Suleiman, the vice president, had contacted the military to see whether they can clamp down when they are told to clamp down on these people. And the military said absolutely no. I mean, they had never been any time in Egypt's history where the military actually went against the people. The military's job is to protect Egypt, and that includes the land of Egypt and the people of Egypt. So they spoke back to him. And
I see.
Yeah, and when they spoke back to him, he knew that this is the end of his career, and this is the end of Mubarak too, because they moved on. Both the defense minister and the chief of staff moved on to talk to Mubarak themselves. The two of them, two military guys, went to the heads of military operation, went to speak to Mubarak. I think at that time they told him, "This is it, Mr. President. We cannot hold it anymore. We're not going to go shoot at the people. It's about time that you leave it." I do not know whether they told them to leave it for Omar Suleiman or to leave it and go.
And is it your sense that the Egypt that takes shape after President Mubarak steps down, in terms of the role of the military, are we looking at a model, something like Turkey almost, where the military is seen as the protector, the sort of final protector of the secular state in Turkey's case?
Maybe like Turkey, but not as visibly as in the Turkish prime, because the military had been keeping away from the power, so to speak, visibly for a long period of time. And they prefer that position. They prefer the position that they will prick the people. When Egypt needs something, Egypt goes to the military. When Egypt runs out of bread, they go to the military, and the military starts some operations to provide the food or whatever, and they do. And so it is a better position for the military to just stay out, to be watchful, but stay out.
We're going to take a couple of calls, and you can join this conversation if you have questions about what's going on in Cairo right now in Egypt. We've got some terrific voices here in the studio. Give us a call, 800-423-8255. Let's go from Peter, who's calling from Lexington.
Hi, this is Peter.
Hi, Peter. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. I'm wondering about the Muslim Brotherhood. How do they fit into the whole landscape over there? What percentage of people in Egypt are Muslim and are radical or are not radical? What is their views on that? How would they work into the government if there was a democratic government? What kind of a role would they play? I think that's what America is mostly afraid of and uncertain of at this time.
All right, Peter, great question. Let's go first to you, Mr. Al-Abbas, and give
this your is sense a very of that. It's yeah. a very good question, because this has been on the mind of the American administration for too long, and it was really the work of the Mubarak administration to scare the American administration by saying the only alternative to me is the Muslim Brotherhood. In reality, the Muslim Brotherhood support will not come out at all under any circumstances to any more than 10 to 15% at maximum. And we should underline the fact that the Muslim Brotherhood had absolutely nothing to do with the present uprising. Actually, in the first week, they prohibited their own people from going out of fear of reprisal from the government. They came in only after the reactionary forces affected some of these revolutionaries, and some people became wounded, and the Muslim Brotherhood doctors came in to help. So it came in very late in the game.
Ina, let me ask you and Zaghloul as well, who, if as Professor Elbaz says, if the Muslim support for the Muslim Brotherhood only makes up 10%, who's the other 90% supporting?
The Egyptian people. And the reason we don't know this representation and how the breakup is because of the suppression of the political system in Egypt. There is no way for me to sit here and tell you, oh, 50% are radical, 25% are secular, 5% are this. And to answer your caller's question, actually, Egypt is not 90% Muslim, 10% Coptic Christian. We've lived side by side with each other for upwards of 1,300 years. And the fact is, Egypt has never been ruled by an extremist Muslim government, not in modern times. And we can't look back and say that Mubarak's fear-mongering has worked on us. I mean, the Muslim Brotherhood, actually, they retracted violence in the 1960s, and people like Ayman al-Zawahiri, who are actually accredited to the Muslim Brotherhood wrongly, were created by the Mubarak administration. These are people who were tortured in his prisons. They were quieted, they were suppressed, and they ran away so that they can get back at these governments in a very radical, wrong way. And obviously, we can't put the blame on the Muslim Brotherhood, because they actually had representation, very marginal representation, in Egypt in the parliament before these past elections.
I'm 100% agree with Dr. Albaz and Ms. Inez. Regard that the Muslim Brotherhood is peaceful, and I don't believe they are radical as the government portrayed them. And basically, Egypt is not based on 5% or 10%, because that's what happened in Egypt is not based on a specific group. You could see from Tahrir Square people wearing the cross and wearing other things, Christians and Muslim all together. And I live in a city which is most of the city, or at least 50% of it, was a Coptic. We never have any problem, and I never heard the word Coptic or Muslims until I come in here, and then basically Egyptian government to be able to hold themselves for the Western to scare them of a particular group.
Let's take another call here. David is calling from Canton. Welcome to Radio Boston, David.
Thank you, and thank you for taking my call. I am Syrian. I'm just calling to tell the Egyptian people we respect you a lot. And we respect the Egyptian army because it protects the people, not the regime. And all that Muslim Brotherhood propaganda is just propaganda. So people will not stand against the regime. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you very much.
David, thank you so much for your call. Ina, do you feel that same solidarity amongst all Egyptians here in the United States?
Yes, I do, especially expatriates. I think that because we've lived in America and we have seen how democracy works, a lot of us are very supportive of the process, and we're extremely proud. I know that if I were in Egypt, I don't know if I would be out there in Tahrir Square in the middle. You know, first, I live in Alexandria, so I'm sure I would be in Alexandria, but to be there in the middle of this, watching the birth of democracy would be amazing, of course.
And we're going to be following the story for the rest of the hour with our guests. We're waiting for President Hosni Mubarak to speak. We're not sure if or when he will. When we do, we're going to bring you that. In the meantime, stay with us. Coming up after the break, the Institute of Contemporary Art, Daring or Disappointing?
We will also have the latest on news from the revolution in Egypt. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Stay with us. This is Radio Boston. This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. In Egypt at this hour, hundreds of thousands of protesters are in Cairo's Tahrir Square. They are waiting to hear from President Hosni Mubarak. He's expected to address the Egyptian people at any moment and possibly step down. Today, Egypt's military stepped in, but confusion still remains over who's calling the shots right now in Egypt. Here's some reports from Tahrir Square just moments ago via Al Jazeera English.
Certainly, some people are wary and concerned, and they don't want the party too soon. But what people here are saying is, whether he's going to leave or not, we are going to continue to send our message and signal our message whatever way we can. And if that's by waving flags or flags or singing or dancing or even crying on the square, then we will continue to do whatever we can to send our message.
And that voice recorded just moments ago from Al Jazeera English. We'll hear more updates from Egypt on All Things Considered coming up in about 20 minutes. And for a preview, we've got WBUR's All Things Considered host Sasha Pfeiffer in the studio. Hi, Sasha.
Hi, Anthony.
What's coming up?
Well, we lots of Egypt coverage, obviously. And one thing will be a conversation I had earlier today with Senator John Kerry. And one of the questions I asked him was what he thought was the final trigger for what could be Mubarak's resignation. And interestingly, he singled out the release this week of that Google executive who says he was jailed and held for 12 days after he was arrested. And here's why Kerry says he thinks that that man's release may end up being powerful enough to lead to Mubarak's resignation.
Because I think it was very emotional and it touched the Egyptian people and reminded them that even in the midst of all of this revolution, people were disappearing and the oppression was continuing. I think it underscored for the people the stakes.
And indeed, Sasha, those stakes quite high. How does Kerry say the U.S. will proceed if the military assumes a greater control here?
Well, I think no matter what happens, whether the military assumes a greater role or not, he says that the U.S., along with many countries in Europe and the Middle East, will keep working with Egypt, as they have behind the scenes all along, to make this transition of power, if there is a transition of power, go smoothly. And he says that if Mubarak steps down, the key next step is going to be an open political process to help build a new government.
The most critical thing is the election. You've got to have a process where the election is accountable, transparent, can be judged to be a legitimate legitimate expression of the aspirations of the people. That's the way Egypt is going to define its future, more than anything that happens in the course of these next days.
So we're going to hear the rest of that interview. We're also going to hear WBUR reporter Bianca Vasquez-Tones. She's at a cafe in Central Square, Cambridge, where a number of Egyptian students have gathered, their grad students, their professors. They're gathered around their laptops, looking on Facebook, watching CNN, watching Al Jazeera to see what's happening. So that's all coming up.
Well, one of the many things we've learned in recent days is just how many Egyptians are all around us in the Boston area. So it's fascinating. Thanks. WBUR Sasha Pfeiffer, host of All Things Considered, coming up in just a few minutes.
Thank you. We are talking about a historic day of change in Egypt. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. What are your thoughts about what's going on in Tahrir Square today? If indeed President Hosni Mubarak does address the Egyptian people and does step down, that's what reports are saying. It hasn't happened yet. What do you want for Egypt next? Again, we're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined now by Rami Khoury. He's a visiting fellow at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. He's the director of the Issam Faris Institute for Public Policy and International Affairs at the American University of Beirut and editor-at-large of the Daily Star newspaper in Lebanon. Rami Khoury, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you. Glad to be with you.
Really a delight to have you. I mean, your regional view there is bar none. So when you look across the Arab world and what may be happening in Egypt today, do you see potential spillover starting tomorrow?
Egypt is the beginning of the spillover, which started in Tunisia, but it really started about two or three decades ago. This did not come out of a vacuum, and this was completely anticipated by anybody who took the time to actually understand what was going on in the region and listen to the voices of its people, especially its young people, which people in the U.S. and Europe and Israel and other places have adamantly refused to do for many, many years. And that now the people have asserted their voice, and what we're seeing is the consequence of that. What you're seeing are common grievances among most of the Arab people, with the exception of the very wealthy oil states. But most of the Arab countries, about 320 out of the 350 million people in the Arab world, suffer great economic stress and autocratic authoritarian government. The combination is electric, it's volatile, and it's finally been ignited in a guy in rural Tunisia who set himself on fire because he just couldn't continue living with the lack of dignity that he felt. And now it's spread to Egypt, and it'll spread to other places in different forms. You're not going to get these mass demonstrations in every country, but this is a problem that many Arab countries suffer, and different regimes will respond in different ways. So yes, this is a part of a regional process, like the solidarity movement in Poland in 1980, 10 years later, brought down the whole Soviet empire. I think you'll see change slowly spreading and rippling through the Arab world.
Rami Khoury, give us a sense in a little bit more detail. I mean, if it's going to be different in different places, we've already seen cabinet changes, for example, in Jordan. The president of Yemen says he's not going to run when his term expires in 2 years. Are those things enough in Yemen and Jordan?
Not enough by themselves, but indicative of the fact that, first of all, the leaderships are very aware of the nature of the grievances that their people are expressing. They're trying to preempt them with moves to stay one step ahead of them. In some cases, those moves might be enough, but I think what people are talking about is not just, you know, increasing their salaries or changing the prime minister or changing the head of state. They're talking about reconfiguring the power structure, about reorganizing the way in which power is exercised by a small elite that's not accountable, not elected, not transparent, and doesn't respect the human rights or even the citizenship rights of its own people. So I think what people are looking for is a much more significant reconfiguration, retooling of how power is exercised, and that just simply means more accountability, more representation, more democracy, but at the same time, understanding that the three strongest value systems and identities in the Arab world are tribalism, Arabism, and Islamism. And those three things will very much color how the democratic transformation takes place in different countries. So we're not going to copy American or British democracy, but I think what you'll copy is certain concepts of things like the consent of the governed, of habeas corpus, of things of that nature. So it's up to the people in each Arab country.
Rami Khoury, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but it looks like President Hosni Mubarak is currently addressing the Egyptian people as we speak. Thank you so much for joining us. Let's turn now to the BBC covering Hosni Mubarak's speech to the Egyptian people.
Crime with all severity. Those who have committed crimes against our youth will be put on trial according to the courts and the laws. They will get severe punishments. And I would like to address the families of these innocent victims. It did sadden me a great deal for what had happened to them, like it did sadden me and it hurt my heart what had happened to them. In the same way you felt this hurt and pain. I would like to tell you that my response to your voice, to your message, to your demands is an irrevocable commitment. And I am determined strongly to pledge what I have promised you with all seriousness and frankness. And I am committed strongly to implement without hesitation or without any revocation. This commitment stems from a severe commitment, a strong commitment in your confidence, and your demands are legitimate and right demands. Any political system can commit mistakes, and any state can commit mistakes. What is most important is to acknowledge these mistakes and put them right as soon as possible, and put those behind them to account, bring them to account. I would like to tell you that as the President of the Republic, I am not embarrassed to listen to the youth of my country and to respond to them.
This is Radio Boston. We are listening to President Hosni Mubarak through the voice of a translator on the BBC who is addressing his nation live right now.
To listen to diktats coming from abroad, whichever it is coming from, and what for whatever reason or pretexts or excuses. Youth of Egypt, sons of Egypt, brother citizens, I have expressed with all clarity my intention not to stand for the forthcoming elections. It suffices me what I have actually deployed of effort to this country for more than 60 years during days of peace and war. I express my commitment to this, and I express a similar pledge and commitment to carry on doing my responsibility to protect the Constitution, the interests of the people, until a transfer of power and responsibility is handed to whoever is.
This is President Hosni Mubarak speaking from Egypt.
Next September, in fair and free elections that will be guaranteed with transparency and freedom. This is the pledge that I've made before God and the nation. And I will protect this pledge until together we take Egypt to the safety, to the shore of safety. I have expressed plans to get out of this crisis and also to implement the demands of the people within the constitutional legitimacy, and in a way that will achieve stability of our society, the demand of its sons, and also at the same time put forward a framework agreed for a peaceful transfer of power through a responsible dialogue amongst all the forces of society and with the most degree of frankness and transparency. I put forward this vision, committed to my responsibility to get the country out of this very difficult situation, and I will carry on doing it, first one after the other, hour after the other, and looking forward for the support and the assistance of everyone who is eager for Egypt's safety and stability. and put it forward to and implement it. And these plans will be implemented within reason by our armed forces. We have, in fact, started a very constructive national dialogue that includes Egypt youth who have led a call for change and all the political forces. This dialogue has resulted in the principled agreement in opinions and stances, which has put us in the path, in the right path to get out of this crisis. And we should carry on this dialogue so that to get it from the framework into a road plan, a clear road plan, and within a precise and fixed timetable. Every day after day, a peaceful transfer of power will start from now until next September. This national dialogue has met over the formation of a constitutional commission which look into the required constitutional amendments and ad hoc legislative amendments. It has also agreed for the formation of a commission which will follow up, a sincere follow-up for what I have pledged before the people. I was eager that the formation of both commissions should be made up from Egyptian personalities worthy of who have experience and trust, composed of judges and legal experts. And on top of this, the number of martyrs that we have lost from the sons of Egypt during this sad event has actually hurt our hearts. I have immediately expressed my instructed people last week to carry out an inquiry and whose result should be put forward to the Prosecutor General so that he can take the legal necessary measures. Yesterday I received the first report regarding the priority constitutional amendments as proposed by the commission that I have set up, composed of the judiciary and the legal expert to study legal and constitutional amendments as required. And in response to the outcome of the Commission's report and in accordance to the powers entrusted to the President of the Republic according to clause 168 from the Constitution, I have asked for the amendment of six clauses, constitutional clauses, which are 67, 77 clause, articles, 88 article, 93, and 89.
You're listening to Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak addressing his people. He said many things in this speech, including that he may stay in power until next September as a peaceful transfer of power happens in Egypt. We are joined in the studio right now by Ina El Hadidi. She's a 25-year-old Egyptian-American part-time student at UMass Boston, and also by Zaghloul Ayad. He's the founder of the Voice of the Arab World, located in Cambridge.
We are also joined by Soha Bayoumi. She's an Egyptian political scientist currently visiting at Harvard University. And Soha, let's start with you. We just heard Hosni Mubarak say your demands are legitimate. He said he will not stand for the upcoming elections, but he expressed his commitment to carry on for at least a period of time. This falls short of resignation, doesn't it?
Definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
And your response to that?
Of course. Well, we haven't listened to the entire speech, but it seems that he's not going to resign. He said that the demands are legitimate, but he also said that there are outside forces, which is still the same security discourse that Vice President Omar Suleiman used. And, well, I'm kind of frustrated right now because everyone in Tahrir Square and in other cities in Egypt are waiting for Mubarak to resign and to say that he is leaving. And we were already looking forward to what
is going to happen after that, but it seems that this is not happening.
It seems that falls short of that. Megan? Mm-hmm.
And we've been told that this is the revolution of the Egyptian youth, but it feels like you're going to have to wait at least 9 months longer.
I think this is kind of really comical. Just listening here, I want to laugh. I mean, this is the third time he's called a press conference that's supposed to change the world, where everyone assumed he's going to resign. And I feel like I'm just listening to the boy who cried wolf. And I don't think the Egyptian people are going to put up with it very much longer. And I actually think this part of the reason his speech was supposed to antagonize the people in Tahrir Square. Like, I'm not going anywhere. And actually, not what he's saying, but what his actions speak a lot louder than what he's saying.
Zaghloul Ayad, today on Radio Boston, the last word goes to you.
Well, basically, I think this guy, not watching president of a country, dictatorship, we look like watching Three Stooges, actually. Just basically, right now, we overwrite 80 million people in the country in just...
Zaghloul Ayad, thank you very much. He's the founder of Voice of the Arab World in Cambridge. We also heard from Soha Ayoumi, Egyptian political scientist at Harvard University.
And from Ina El Hadidi. She's a 25-year-old Egyptian-American studying at UMass Boston. Thank you to you all for coming in today.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at boston.com. I'm Anthony Brooks.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.